Jimmy, Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Crane, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, and we're sponsored by the 2015 Huge Improv Theater Weekend Summer Intensive in Minneapolis. Now, it's taking place on the weekend of August 14th or the weekend of August 28th. Huge Theater Summer Improv Intensive runs all day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with an optional kickoff jam on Thursday night. In one weekend, you'll receive 17 hours of instructions. You'll get to perform in a Saturday night main stage show at Huge Theater, and you'll get to see six shows for free. All this plus a limited edition t-shirt for only $300. That's right, for only $300. To sign up for either weekend of August 14th or the weekend of August 28th, visit hugetheater.com and click on classes. That's hugetheater.com. Click on classes. We'll see you this August because it's going to be huge. And if you find yourself here in the city of Chicago this July, I'd love it. I'd love to work with you in my Artist Slow Comedy Summer Intensive. Now, I'm going to be offering it two separate weekends. The first weekend will be July 11th through the 12th or July 25th through the 26th. In the Art of Slow Comedy, we teach you to slow your scene work down so you can find the game in the scene. Improv is as easy as a conversation. Also, we teach you how to be real before you can be funny, and guess what? You're even funnier. I limit these workshops, so space is limited. We're already starting to fill them up. So if you want to more information about this, all you have to do is go to my website, jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com. We have another episode of Improv Nerd, but what would you expect? You wouldn't expect anything less from us. And this was another episode we recorded at the Pitt Theater, or as the long version is the People's Improv Theater. But if you're in the know, we call it the Pitt, for the New York Improv Festival. And the group we had on was Centralia, and they consist of Jay Roderick, Matt Higgins, and Kevin Scott. And I just love talking to these guys because these guys are older in terms of they're my age, and they came from a different – they didn't come from the main – mainstream, you know, they didn't come from the institutions. They really came from like an acting background. They're very physical in their improvisation. And we just talked about their approach to the work and the evolution of the group. They were originally members of a group called Burn Manhattan that was directed by Shira Piven, and how they were influenced by her, what the improv scene was like in New York when they were starting out. Now, before we get to the episode with Centralia, I just want to say I really had a great time in New York, and I had a great time interviewing these guys because they were so excited and so honored to be on Improv Nerd, which always makes my job a lot easier. And also that these guys, and you'll hear it in the interview, they didn't come from the traditional improv route. They didn't study at one of the schools and then, you know, were in the improv scene. They kind of came from it from the back door, and that's really cool. And the other thing that I liked was in Ronnie Pascal, who at the Pit is the one who said, you know, these guys pack the house, and that they're older guys like my age. I'm older, if you can't tell in my voice or my picture. I think my picture really says I'm older. And they pack the house, and that a young audience appreciates what these guys do, because what these guys do is really, really unique. So I know you're going to enjoy this episode. They have a different view, a different approach, and it's really cool. So here it is, the Centralia episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
I want to start with you, Jay. There's something that the whole group has in common. And that is, you guys all lost your dads early in life.
Yeah.
How does that come out in your improv?
We have terrible mortality, father mortality.
How did your father die?
Heart attack.
And how old were you?
We are starting funny tonight! He got it right the second time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did your father die, Kevin?
My father, why am I laughing? He died of a cerebral aneurysm.
How old were you?
I was 20.
And Matt?
My dad died from cancer.
And how old were you?
I was, 30?
Okay. So you all lost your fathers. So how does that come out in your improv?
I think a lot of our scenes end up being about masculinity or legacy or some ridiculous high standard you're trying to live up to with a father who's present or not, and so it's getting very Freudian. But yeah, I think there's a lot of daddy issues here. Yeah, yeah.
Kevin, did you agree with what Jay said?
Yeah, you know, it's not conscious. Like, we've addressed it, you know, like, oh, we don't have dads. But it's not like we sit around and say, how can we capitalize
yeah.
our dad's line with laughs? You know, it's just, but it is present. You know, the further you get away from it, the less present it is. But it's always there. It shapes who you are as a person. And if you're being a real honest improviser, you're bringing yourself to it. So if it's part of me, it's part of my play.
And Matt, for you, how does...
Well, now that I think about it, we do a lot of times we go back to some of the same characters, like the Irish son that's leaving Ireland and he's going, you know, and so I guess maybe there's some sort of stuff there, right? You know, there's a lot of father fighting and stuff, and it always seems to come back to, like, these Irish guys, right?
Pretty much.
Very
right?
often.
And we do a lot of, like sort of World War II, well, we were for a while, like, two characters as well. I don't know.
Well, the thing that I love about you guys is you're in terms of improv people. I mean, you guys are older, right? I mean, in improv age, you're probably around 100, right? Because a lot of people, it's like 20s and stuff like that. Yet you pack them in, and people, you know, really relate to what you do. What do you think it is, Kevin, about you guys that connects with the younger generation of improvisers?
Boy. We're like a, you know, an aging Taylor Swift of improv. And it's intangible, you know. We just have it. No, I think we're still doing it. You said, you know, we are older, so we're unique. A lot of people our age, you know, have either moved on to bigger careers. And don't have to do this anymore, or they're just too tired to do it, and we're still doing it. I actually said to someone earlier today, it's like, I feel like a big fish in a small pond, and that's not a bad thing. You know, like, we don't perform that often, and when we do, enough people show up to fill a house, and it feels good. You know, we would improvise in our apartments, but it's nicer to hear people respond to it. So I think the answer is we're still doing it, and that's what people need.
I agree with Kevin, and also I feel that we sort of came about sort of organically. We kind of found each other, and I also think that we had some really good direction early on with Shira Piven, and so I feel like her, like, that still is with us, what she did with us.
So tell us about the influence of Shira, Jay, because you guys, if you look at your, you know, trajectory, you didn't study in the mainstream places, the Pitt, the Magnet, and UCB.
Exist.
They didn't exist. So what was Shira's influence on you guys?
Shira worked with us back when we had to burn Manhattan, and she was a direct, you know, conduit back to the Compass Players with her family,
Joyce
Byrne
and
Joyce.
Byrne,
right?
Yes.
Byrne.
And
what a great acting coach she was.
we performed there once, and Byrne gave, God bless him, he gave a 10-minute curtain speech before he went on and said, "This is the greatest thing you will ever see in your life."
And which was considered short for him, actually.
Yeah, that was a short one. And of course,
10 minutes.
Of course, we underwhelmed.
Right.
She brought about this interest in sincerity and this interest in doing, whether it was a Herald or some other sort of long form or some sort of group game, and she brought in the physicality, mm-hmm. Carrying each other. We were basically pushing each other, literally pushing each other around and sweating and grunting like Roman wrestlers for a good 6 months before we did any scenes at all. Frankly, I'd still like to just do that.
So you talked about, like, there was no UCB, there was no Pitt, there was no Magnet back then. What was it like when you guys got here in New York, Matt, in the 90s?
There was nobody here.
It's a forest.
It was really cool.
New York was a forest.
It was
all of Manhattan?
The Lower East Side was just
green
green
truck farms,
but it was really cool because we got to play in very unique places. And this is a really amazing space right here, and we love being here. But we also were kind of like finding any little spot to perform. So we'd be in a place where like the ceiling, we could touch the ceiling with our finger, or it would be a really narrow space, and we really sort of morphed into the place where we were. Wouldn't you agree, Kevin?
I would agree. One place we played for a long time was called the House of Candles, which was not a legal theater.
Yeah. They're applauding for the House of Candles.
Yeah, and the name of our show was Burn Manhattan. The theater was House of Candles, and we were always being shut down by the fire department, which should have been a given, you know, with the name. But it was like a place that was condemned by the fire department. I mean this literally, like once a month. Yeah. They would say, you can't be in here. And we're like, but the audience is going to be here at 10.
There was a guy who came in to all the electricity went off. Remember the guy who came in? And he got like electrocuted. Remember
He died.
Did he really?
No.
It was a death trap, and they had no certificate of occupancy, but we would do a show there. That was sort of New York improv at the time. You just found a place, and you would literally break into it and say, we're doing a show tonight, and people would come to the show, and it would be amazing.
Speaking of that, when we first all got together, it was in Kevin's apartment, and like Jay was saying, we were rolling around in the summertime, cat hair on our face and the whole thing. And then they got kicked out of their apartment.
Fire marshal again, right?
Yeah, the fire marshal. That's the same.
Your nemesis.
And Kevin had the key, and so we would just go back into the empty apartment and sort of use it as rehearsal space, which was kind of cool. And so that kind of was the energy. And that's, like, I guess, a youthful kind of energy. Kids probably still do it today, I guess.
They tell me. That's what they tell me. So, Jay, were you able to get a following and audiences back then?
Slowly but surely. We had a lot of really small houses, but I think we were doing some fairly unique long-form stuff then at the time, and we had a guy in the group who is still a friend who was a really amazing promoter of
who was
the group.
That?
His name is Todd Stashford.
Oh,
terrific.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And he's great at promoting.
Check out his Facebook page.
Yeah.
I mean, yes.
That's right. Yes.
I wish I had that. We talked about confidence in the earlier show.
Yeah.
Of self-promotion.
Yeah, self-promotion.
He's great.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good. So he rang the bell a lot, and we, I think, just developed a little bit of a following. We had many dips and valleys and plenty of low audience shows, but I think we, you know, managed to be doing something a little bit different for a while there.
And the other thing that I like about you guys is the absurdity. I mean, you're not afraid to go to the absurdity. Now, a lot of people just do absurd for absurd sake. You know, they'll say something shocking and there's nothing behind it. How do you guys make how do you make absurdity work for you?
Well, I think, you know, life is absurd. Life is profane, and so we're just reflecting what we see through our own filter. And a lot of it goes back to, you know, Matt mentioned our director. She helped us figure out a lot how to sort of harness and shape our energy physically, narratively, comedically. It's just fun. You know, at this point, we do the show to entertain ourselves, so it's not even like we're saying, let's go absurd. We just find it funny. And these two guys in particular, I'm referring to Jay on my left and Matt on my right, for those of you listening. They're very absurd guys, and so we just sort of follow our id, as it were.
Jay, what does Kevin bring to the group?
Kevin brings a lot of rage.
as a performer or as a person, or both? Is he angry?
I have to say, one of my favorite things that he does is when he gets apoplectic on stage. And so he's in Commedia, we call it the Brighella, the little boss. And there's very few things that make me laugh harder than when you get mad on stage.
What does Matt bring to the group?
He's a very sick man. I'll leave it at that. Okay. I think you're fearless physically and immensely strong physically. And you can rock a cloth on your head as no one else.
Matt, what does Jay bring to this group?
Jay is the The greatest American actor. He is, I've said that before to people, that I think that he's the best actor in America. And I would love to see Jay throw down with Mark Rylance, just like the two of them. I know, I think that Jay is steeped in... he's got such a great brain inside of his head. We've taken it out a couple of times and played with it. But no, this is so, so wonderful and just crazy. And Kevin is...
he didn't ask the question.
No, I saw him. He was going to ask the question.
He's a good listener, Kevin.
I'm a good listener.
He's a good listener.
And Kevin is a very good tap dancer. And so he's not really a good tap dancer. He doesn't know how to tap dance, but he pretends to know how to tap dance. And so, like, for a lot of times we repeat things, and so for a few shows in a row, like this box right here. Like
it's a black box.
The black box right here, I would get Kevin up on the black box and make him tap dance. And, so that...
That's
it.
So, Kevin, what is your assessment on Jay? Everyone had their say.
I agree with what Matt said. Jay's very, very smart. He's very deep. You can't F around with when you're on stage with Jay. I think you have to bring sincerity and honesty to it. And he is a fantastic actor. We're funny guys. I think
all of us. Yeah.
But I don't think we see ourselves as funny people. I think we see ourselves, as pretentious it may sound, you know, we're artists and we're trying to express who we are. We just happen to do it through comedy. And Jay, for me, is sort of a signpost of, like, you know, we're not saying what we want to say. I can see it in Jay's eyes. Like, this scene doesn't matter. What are we doing?
What about Matt?
The complete opposite. in many ways, he's a clown in the classic sense of a clown. He can make anything funny. He's sort of the absurd guy. You know, I used to call, and some of the other members, I don't know if we ever admitted this to Matt, we'd say we have to go to Mattland for a while. in a show. Like in the middle of a show. He would just... He's doing it for our listeners at home. He's doing it right now. He would just go off somewhere that, you know, you have to guess and you have to sort of follow where he's going. And it was a place that we didn't know as natives. We could only be tourists. But he lived there, and we had to go with him and see where it led.
I didn't know they said that about me. And I probably did. Todd Stashwick does this thing. Like, Todd asked me one time, he said, do you want, like, beans on your burrito? And I sort of didn't answer him right away. And then, like, a couple minutes later, I went, like, oh, I'll take beans on my burrito. And then he created the song. He went, because it's three minutes later, Matt. 3 minutes later, Matt. So, yeah.
Three minutes
later, Matt. I think I have a delay. You guys, would you agree that, like, yeah.
I'll tell you in 3 minutes.
How does that work for you on stage? Like you don't grasp a premise? It takes you a while?
No,
you're laughing.
No.
I just said sure. We positioned you as a really special needs person.
I don't know. You know, I sometimes have said that I don't think what we do is actually improv. Right? I think at this point we've been so curious about clowning, comedia, politics, all that stuff, and we're also friends. So I feel like when we come out, it's not necessarily improv. We're just really clowning. Would you guys agree?
And when you say clowning, because I don't think people get it.
Well, I don't even know what I mean.
You mean like Del Arte? You mean?
Yeah, we had a director for a while by the name of Christopher Bayes after she got pregnant and moved on to other things. Christopher Bayes, and he was like a clown. I don't know what kind of clown. I don't know if he was Buffon. You know, there's these types of clowns that have all French names, and the people are very serious about it. We studied with him for like a year, and it's a type of classic, old school, 500-year-old performance.
Is that where the physicality came from what you got to?
Partially Shira, even before that. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's not all that we do, but it's a big part of what we do.
Because, I mean, you guys are so physical. And, like, when you just saw me improvise, I am just, like, way not in touch with my body. I'm basically a talking head.
Just you wait a few minutes here.
Yes. I stretch before in preparation. What advice would you give somebody like me who's, like, doesn't move very well on stage to really get more into their body?
You know, I think it's about relaxation. It's about starting a scene physically before you have any inkling of a premise. And 90% of the scenes I start are some sort of large muscle movement into a space. And sometimes it actually turns into something good. Sometimes it's a but
when you say, give me an example of how you would start a scene.
Let the court show them.
So you would just go towards the audience with a strong emotion and a strong physicality.
Some sort of. I don't know what that is. It's kind of John Wayne meets perp walk meets bath salts.
Okay. And then how and then so how would you guys respond to that?
Physically, I mean, we did, if this goes to Shira's stuff again, we did a lot of, she called it like kinesthetic response, in a very arty name. She was really into Anne Bogart, who did viewpoints work, you know, which is a way of looking at theater and dissecting it physically. And so a lot of it is just sort of you feel it first. You know, you get into the space. You know, some of it's Viola Spolin related and stuff. You engage in the space first, you're not thinking about it. You know, you're not thinking about the scene, and it's a way of getting out of your head. But it's also a way of just activating the space. People go to see a show. They don't go to listen to a show, unless it's a podcast, of course. And so, you know, the mandate was there to give them something to see that's interesting, and that's it. Just be interesting, be interested, and then you'll figure out what the scene is. We do narrative improv, for anyone who hasn't seen the show. We do scenes with characters, and they talk, but they begin from just a pure physical dive in and explore kind of a thing, and you have to be comfortable with abstraction. You have to be comfortable with the fact that this, like all improv, we don't know where it's going, but it's going somewhere concrete. And we got to a place where we're comfortable with it because we were in a rehearsal in an apartment that we broke into 3 or 4 days a week and sweating it out without an audience, without any judgment other than our own and our director, whose judgment was always...
So how long did you do that process before you put a show up? Months?
Well, we didn't want to. So we just wanted to kind of have a laboratory that we're going to come to and everything. And then it was Shira who said, you know, we should probably put this in front of some people. And then we did like an improv contest or something like that. So initially we didn't really, we weren't doing it.
It's 6 to 8 months of rehearsal before anyone saw it, at least. Am I right? Am I accurate in that? And then probably another year total before we said, all right, we're going to do a run of 2 shows. And then we're going to go away for another 6 months. So it was a long time.
And what do you think people, you know, who are listening to this podcast and want to be more physical, what simple things can they do to be more physical on stage?
Well, what Jay did just earlier, you know, walking with his
embodied arms, an emotion.
Yeah, I would mirror him if that were happening in the scene. I would probably at the start just start mirroring him. And then from there... don't stop, just continue and see where that leads you, and then it'll transform into a completely other character and a completely different place. And so just to mirror each other and explore and heighten the movement until it transforms, until it reveals something else. Kind of like space ball, you know, when you pass the space around,
yeah,
and it transforms.
Yes.
And like sort of the same thing, but with your body, like just sort of let it go, and then you know, something sort of comes out, and then it affects your voice and everything.
Take a dance class, take a contact improv class, take a
yoga,
martial arts, stage combat.
Is it gratifying? Because I'm hearing you talk about this. I mean, this is like, I mean, today what you guys are talking about is just it almost seems like it's from another era. You know, in terms
it is.
Of
it's from the 90s.
Are you? But I mean, are you like really proud of what you guys have done and the reception it gets?
Silence.
I am immensely grateful. I am immensely grateful that we, these four relics, get a usually nice response. Again, we perform about as often as there's a presidential election, so it's easy to get, I think, an audience like that. But yeah, I'm immensely grateful, personally.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you're young and you're starting out, and of course, we all pursued show business as a profession, and when you're growing up, you know, you see the Academy Awards, and you think, what if? Or, you know, someone on TV, what if? And so there was a period of adjustment when you start to see people you come up with on the covers of magazines. People that were in our group. People left
our
group.
Who was made the cover?
Well, Kate Walsh was in our group.
Right, she was on Grey's Anatomy.
She was on Grey's Anatomy and some other stuff. And you see people go, and other people, I was in my old Chicago group.
Bang Bang.
Bang Bang. Michael Shannon's been Oscar nominated.
So Tracy Letts is a Pulitzer Prize winning.
Yeah.
Are you okay with that? Like, I'm a totally jealous person.
Next time I see them,
honestly.
You know, you have a different relationship with it depending on where you are. I'm very proud that I had the time that I did with them, and I learned a lot from them, and I'm always thrilled when people have that kind of success. But in your darkest hours, of course, you're like, well, what happened, you know, to me or to the world or the timing that I didn't have that same, you know, destiny?
Matt, how do you do with other people getting success?
Well, first of all, Kevin, I feel like that's my fault, and I apologize. No. I feel great about it. I feel okay about it. You know, it's funny because, like, in some ways, I don't really care. Yeah, it's really great. I would love to have lots more money, and I should probably be more responsible and work toward that. I was listening to Jordan talk, and I was like trying to think, like, God, I got to do that.
That Jordan said that you got to do?
Jordan was saying about, like, find out what you love and do it really quickly. And I think that for me, my problem is or was that I love so many things. And, you know, when back in the 90s, whatever, like there was no sort of pit, there was no levels or anything. So I was studying with guys, like, with teachers and stuff, and there was no level. And so, like, I had no assumption that I was moving forward with it. And so I felt like that was good for me because I remained in my beginner's mind. I did a lot of Grotowski stuff. So I was very eclectic, like you guys. You studied with Bill Esper.
Who's a well-known Meisner teacher.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, getting back to your earlier question, I feel like for me, it was a good thing not to have, I love the Pit and UCB and all that, but for me, not to have gone through some sort of level system, just to be out there, like, finding, I'll work with this person, and I feel like that influences our work a little bit, right?
Great. Speaking of work, let's get down to work. Let's do, we're going to improvise now. Mm-hmm. I'm terrified. Whenever I work with groups, I'm terrified because you guys are like, you know, you're like three brothers, right? And, you know, how am I going to fit in? Am I going to be able to keep up? All of that stuff. So what advice would you give me to work with you guys?
Well, is your father still alive?
He is.
Ooh.
He did go to prison.
He went to prison? Yeah. That counts.
He
that
did
counts.
Go to prison, yeah. He's dying right now.
It's the Does same that, thing. It's,
okay.
Oh, it's a,
no, he is dying, seriously.
Oh, yeah. Use it. No, it's the same. We improvise. We don't know all the lexicons.
Right.
We, you know what I mean?
We
make up our own labels for the same exact thing.
But, I mean, we can all agree that our fathers weren't present in our lives growing up. Is that pretty much?
We can take some peace in that.
Yes, yes. Okay, now, let's check. All right, so we've got some musical accompaniment.
Yeah.
All right, great, and then we'll cut it ourselves.
Yeah. All right.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Yes.
Welcome to Café Solo.
Oh.
Where every table is a table for one.
Oh, that's so nice. Oh. is that flower for me?
The flower is for you, and only for you, monsieur. You. Welcome, have a seat.
Thank you.
Champagne! Champagne for you alone. There is no shame in being alone. Everyone here tonight is alone. Together. Sir, welcome to Cafe Solo.
Thank you.
Have a seat by yourself.
Thank you. I will smoke my cigarette.
Please do, by yourself.
You're new.
Yes,
here.
I am.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Pedro.
I'm not comfortable enough with you to give you my name. That is why I am here. I will give you his name. His name is Herman. How dare you?
Please, gentlemen, not again tonight. Let us enjoy our solitude together.
Excuse me, messieurs.
Yes.
I notice you're sitting very close to each other. This is a cafe for one person per table. You do not break the rules.
There are no juices here.
He approached me. I did not approach him.
That is a lie.
No, there's no juices. It is not. You came over to my table.
I thought this was better light. I thought it was better light.
He's a liar.
Messieurs, this will have to be settled with a duel. We have only one gun. I will place it here, between you on the floor. You will walk 10 paces, rush back to the gun.
In any direction.
10 paces, you can go in a circle if you want. I don't
care. Don't make me do this.
You know, it is not about one person table. You know what it's really about.
I do, you're right. I do. It is about. First time I've touched another human being.
Yes.
Since I exited my mother's open spot. No longer do I want to be alone.
No.
No longer.
No. You do not have to be alone. All you have to do is pick up the phone and answer it.
You're right. I'm going to call Cheryl.
Yes. Been asking about you.
I have to wait for her to call so I can answer.
I know.
My God, mon Dieu.
Go.
I can't do it.
No.
I can't do it alone.
No. All right, I will go.
Come with me.
Café solo.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Yes. Is this Cheryl?
Cheryl is calling?
Yes.
Oh, Cheryl.
This is me, Cheryl.
Hello, Cheryl. You wish to speak to whom? To whom are you wishing to speak?
What? I want to speak
to the world.
Armand's new friend.
You want to speak to Armand, Armand's new friend? It is for you.
Please.
Help me, Tate.
All right.
Help me.
Put me on speaker.
Put me on speaker!
All right, you are on speaker.
Bonjour. Bonjour.
Bonjour, Cheryl.
Tell her now that you love her.
Cheryl?
Yes, Herman?
My new friend says I should say that I love you.
That is right.
You must help me make the words with my mouth.
You must put your hands on and in my mouth.
I love you.
And I love you too.
I will never forget this.
And sing. Now I gotta tell you something. My accent changed 4 or 5 times.
Oh.
Okay. What do you tell people that are like, oh, I don't do good accents or?
Don't do accents. No, I can't.
Don't do accents.
I think it's like object work. You have to practice. You have to. It's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you're.
Which we've neglected.
We've neglected.
Neglected what?
Certain skills and work, but you know you got to work your articulators and all that actor school stuff and practice your accents and record yourself. Everyone has an iPhone, just record it and listen to it. It is a skill, and part of being an improviser that the audience wants to see is a display of skill that they don't have. It's like watching dancers on Broadway or whatever. They want to see someone who can do something they can't. Accents is just one of those things that you have to practice. And there's a contract between you and the audience. You know, you see a lot of bad improv where, like, the third line in is like, I don't know what happened to my accent. I wonder where it went. And it's...
So what happens...
We've done that 16 times.
Tonight.
So when the accent keeps changing, what do? Just...
I think that's wonderful. And go with it. And, just go with it and own it and embrace it and play with it.
Yeah, I mean, there are no mistakes. You embrace it. But that's a mistake that... you know, homework would prevent from happening.
I think if it gets you in your head and disconnects you from the other person and keeps you from creating something that's real and immediate, then
don't let it. It could be the most, when that happens, it's you're not trying to mess up your accent. You're trying to do the best accent you can do, but it's coming out a certain way, maybe not so great. But that's true spontaneity, right? That's like something truly spontaneous, not planned. And so then maybe that's something to jump on and to run with, right?
Something that I didn't bring up, and you can't tell by the podcast, but you're all in dark suits with skinny ties, and you're dressed very nicely. How important is that for you guys in terms of?
I think it's part of the display of skill sort of contract thing. Like, well, the audience is coming to see something, we should be respectable. But it started with Second City, Compass Players. I'm from Chicago. Todd Stashek was a Chicago guy. Another guy, John Teese, who started with us, was a Chicago guy. And that was the sort of classic Second City look that we wanted to represent coming from Chicago to New York.
What's the message, Jay, that they're saying to the audience when you come out in ties and jackets?
I think that we're trying to establish a stylized, heightened reality on stage. That's all.
And also, it kind of transforms, too, because the suit jacket gets taken off and stomped on. And
it could become a dress or an apron or... hair.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool to sort of like just come in dressed up and then like just watch it get torn apart. And I guess there's some sort of comment on the corporate world as well.
Yeah, in the beginning I think there was a sort of a conscious awareness that we look kind of corporate and Wall Street, and we played with that. And that would, you know, be one of the areas we would improvise.
Great. So let's take, we only got a couple times. I want to cram as many questions as we can for these guys. If we could turn the hotlines up, great. Just put your hands up and we'll answer your questions. Way back there, yes.
I have a direct physical theater question that I want to ask. If Kevin's Morgella in the comedian world, what are you guys?
Yeah, who are you?
What was the question? I couldn't hear.
If he's Morgella,
this is...
I'd say Matt's either Arlecchino or he's Arlecchino, and I verge between Capitano and Zani.
Okay, that went. I don't understand that at all.
Capitano.
Know Commedia dell'arte without knowing it. If you've ever seen The Simpsons, all the Simpsons characters are inspired by Commedia dell'arte.
Thanks for saving me there, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Stop characters that were done for centuries.
I believe there's only four of types. Am I right?
No, there's bunches, but there's
a washerwoman, right?
Great. Another question for these guys. Yeah, right here. So how to find your voice as, you know, like...
As a team or as an individual?
How do you find your voice as a team or individual? Yes, Kevin.
I think the one thing that we used to do a lot of, this was a Shira Piven thing again, other than the you know, external style we put on it, the sort of physicality in the suits, that was one thing with our voice. We were always concerned with image, because we were punk rockers in the sense that we did it all ourselves, made our own flyers, we booked the space. You know, we had to do everything. And so we're like, we knew we were in control of it, and we had a responsibility to make it make sense. But one thing that Shira had us do was read stuff we were reading in our daily lives, newspapers, books, stuff that touched us, either from our past or that we're currently reading, that concerned us as people. It had nothing to do with performance, but like, what did you read today? What matters? And we would share that with each other until we found sort of a common set of interests or concerns or, you know, stuff that we could talk about. So the content itself had a voice as well as all the packaging.
Kevin and we met Jay later on, but Kevin and I sort of, grew up a lot together, right?
Yeah.
From our late teenage years and stuff. And one of the things that was happening when we were young was the Oliver North thing. And Kevin and I just thought
this
that was the
Oliver North
thing in the
just
world.
Just Google it.
And so we were very curious. I think all of us up here are very curious about these freaks that are in charge, and it's just this wild thing where these crazy people are in charge, and we all, I think, share that point of view, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Jay and I will text each other like when the Republican responds to like something, you know, like, oh my God, this is insane.
So to add on to it, how do you get your group to do it? First, admit that there's things that you share in common that you want to talk about, and then talk about it. Don't just do another robot pirate scene on stage. You know what I mean? The improv scene you've seen before. Like, do the scene that, you know, you say the things you're afraid to say in real life. You know, do the scenes you're not allowed to do in real life on stage. You have an obligation to bring yourself to it. So first you have to recognize, this is getting very pretentious, you have to recognize where your artist is and what your artist wants to talk about, and then give yourself permission to do that. You know, it's a Tracy Letts thing. You know, there's this guy I worked with, and it's
Pulitzer Prize winning.
Osage
County is what.
Yeah, here's how we stopped taking suggestions, and I had heard of that from Bang Bang. We did a show once, and we used to take suggestions, and he came backstage and he says, "We're never taking another suggestion. Fuck those people. We're smarter than them." This is our audience he's talking about.
And Tracy is a very intense guy when he's saying that.
Very intense guy, and I had issues with that for a while. But we have to give them what they want. But the truth is, they don't know what they want. They want you to be at your best. They want you to be exploring the things you're interested in exploring. You know, so as an improv group, we never say, what's the audience going to like tonight? It's like, what do we want to do tonight? And then share with an audience and have that communal theater experience that first comes from us.
Great. We got to wrap this up. This has been wonderful. We love to end with this. What one piece of advice, Matt, would you give an improviser starting out today?
One piece of advice is just continue to be curious and just stay in your beginner's mind and just keep on taking classes and reading acting books and just soak it in.
Jay?
Give yourself a break.
What do you mean by that?
Watch out for the self-recrimination, and I spend an awful lot of time beating myself up, and it's just an absolute waste of time.
You don't beat yourself up anymore? Like after tonight's show, you okay with it?
So far.
Yeah,
okay.
My favorite part of the show is actually afterwards when Jay's beating himself up.
How does Jay beat himself up? Is Jay the guy who goes like, oh, that show sucked? Does he go?
Literally beats himself up. Now, he'll like throw things.
Oh, really?
Not really. No.
Up,
I'm
off,
kidding.
And
I'm
up.
Kidding.
Yeah. Hey, Jay used to be much worse. I can say worse. But he used to be much more intense after a show. And it was always a concern of like, geez, we killed tonight. Why is Jay in the corner shaking and crying?
Jay, seriously, were you the buzzkill? Because I'm
probably was.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did you change that?
I went home. And I exited myself from being a pain in the ass after the show and grew up.
What piece of advice, Kevin, would you give improvisers starting today?
No one is going to tell you you can't do it except yourself. And so just do it as often as you can. It's not precious. I know we talked very pretentious tonight, but it's not precious. It's just play and get out and do it.
You guys, thank you so much. Kevin Scott, Matt Higgins, Jay Roddy.
And there you have it. There's another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. Can you believe it? It's unbelievable. We're cranking these out. We're just making the donuts here. I want to thank Centralia. I want to thank Jay Roderick and Matt Higgins and Kevin Scott for such great insight and such really cool stuff. And I loved what they talked about. You know, when they were starting out in New York and some of the venues they played, it was like, ooh, that's pretty cool. I also want to thank Ronnie Pascal and Ali Farinakian for being such great hosts here at the Pitt Theater for the New York City Improv Festival. We really appreciate that. I want to thank my producer here in Chicago, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. Without Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. Also, if you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, the host of Improv Nerd, and my award-winning improv classes and workshops, and to sign up for my Improv Nerd blog, each week I send out a new blog that makes you a better improviser and a better person. Well, the better person is up to you. Go to JimmyCorain.com. That's JimmyCorain.com. It doesn't cost you anything. As you know, we're also taking over social media, and I think we're doing this pretty smartly, too. We started with Facebook, so go to Improv Nerd and our page and like us, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Then follow us on Twitter, Improv_Nerd, and then check out our wonderful YouTube channel. Also, we're on Feral Audio. Well, that's a podcast collective. And we're not alone at Feral Audio. Feral Audio has some of the most hilarious, innovative, and unique podcasts out there. People like Chelsea Peretti, Dan Harmon, Todd Barry, Matt Dwyer. The names go on and on. Jimmy Corain of Improv Nerd. I had to put myself in there. Just go to feralaudio.com. I also would like to thank our sponsor, Huge Theater in Minneapolis. Check out Huge's Improv Theater Weekend Summer Intensive. All you have to do is go to their website, which is hugetheater.com, and click on classes. And before I go, I want to thank the most important person, and that is you for listening. Until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome. Not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. as he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced Ve A Pay in Spanish.
Oh my gosh.
He spots his dear friend, who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh my